and the weather today. Highs of 16 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. But she's okay, it's fine. Mary's waving at the door. We might let her in. Yes, she's all great stuff there. So lows of 10 degrees centigrade. Cloudy start with breaking cloud around midday, with sunny periods developing.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Adventurous holiday maker, or indeed the unadventurous holiday maker. Well, a recent survey by Hilton Hotels and Resorts has suggested that Brits have been bitten by the travel bug, as 6 in 10 plan to visit a country they've never been to within the next 12 months. Now, to address the positive examples and positive experiences of being an experience hunter, we're delighted to be able to welcome ace positive psychologist, the fabulous Miriam Akdar, this morning. Miriam, how are you?
I'm very well.
Excellent. Well, I do like your character strengths of curiosity, social intelligence, appreciation of beauty and excellence, creativity and love of learning, all of which slot into this survey, really, in terms of how travel can teach.
Ah, well, that just shows you how travel expands the mind and helps to develop us.
So in terms of this research that's been carried out, clearly, is it demonstrating that Brits are getting more confident, that we are actually sort of stepping into the unknown with faith that all's going to be well?
I think it shows that Britain is becoming a nation of experience hunters. We're hungry for new experiences. You know, we're responding to that call to adventure. And this really sort of adds to our well-being, because there's both a pleasure in trying out new travel experiences and a satisfaction and meaning from going to somewhere that you've already always wanted to go to.
Over half of those surveyed in this Hilton Hotels and Resorts analysis said they would give up designer clothes, phone upgrades and streaming services just to actually fund their holiday and to actually work through that. So, you know, clearly we seem to be seeing a shift, because I seem to recall it wasn't too long ago in the 20th century that Brits were accused of being perhaps a little bit too conservative in our destinations. You know, usually it was the Spanish holiday resorts was the height of excitement.
Yeah, certainly. It seems that Britain really is becoming hungry for those new experiences. I think people are becoming wise to all the benefits that they get from travel. You know, it's something new, something different. It expands our horizons. There's the pleasure of experiencing the new, and a deeper sense of satisfaction if we've got sort of something on our bucket list that we've always wanted to do. Then, you know, people are putting that, making that a higher priority than consuming things.
Looking at the positive psychology training website, I can see lots of things that dovetail neatly into that. But in terms of where British folk actually get their travel inspiration from, is it the movies? Is it a case of, you know, the media that we actually see? You know, we kind of check out the latest editions of Hawaii 5.0 and Miami Vice and so on, say, oh, I'm going to go there.
Well, nearly half of the people in the survey say that it's TV and film is their main source of inspiration. And with people in their teens and 20s, they're nearly twice as likely to use Facebook for inspiration than any other age group. So it seems that social media and traditional media are the things that are really sort of driving this hunger.
In terms of advice for people who are looking to embark on a new travel adventure, apart from obviously making sure your passport's up to date, what sort of suggestions would you put forward?
Well, there is a website that you can go to. It's ourstageyourstory.com, and there's plenty of inspiration there. And you can actually create your own vision board as well and get lots of tips to inspire you. And one tip I would say is to write it down. We are more likely to achieve something that's on our bucket list if you actually write down your goal. So, and also just do it. You know, there's a certain pleasure in dreaming about it, but the real satisfaction comes from putting it into action.
One of our regular Florida correspondents, Mike Dooley, of course, are very keen on vision boards and visualising and so on, and often recounts the tale of how he, even when he was nowhere near actually sort of going off to on his various world tours, he would actually just put clippings together and cuttings and actually create an impression. Is that, from a psychological point of view, something which is really a good way of dealing with issues? And certainly the travel thing, so folk are listening to this today, they're sort of thinking, well, actually, I've never actually been to, for instance, the Himalayas or Australia and so on, but if I collect photographs and so on, you know, visualize it, you know, that can actually help at least trigger off the steps to get there.
Well, it will help to inspire you because you've got those images there to play with, but even more important than that, it's motivating as well. You know, when you see those images of the places that you want to go to and the experiences that you have, then it's more likely to inspire you to sort of take action and actually make your dream a reality.
In terms of benefits of travel, I mean, again, just returning to that, and also the science of flourishing, which I've been particularly impressed with your own views and thoughts on this, that sort of notion of really kind of seeing other cultures, different experiences and so on, is that something which actually we can't teach in an educational academic system? You have to go there and experience it.
Ah, well, that's a really interesting question. I would say that there are definitely benefits to experience. You know, when you're experiencing something firsthand, and there are five pathways to flourishing, and travel provides all of them. So, travel provides positive emotions. It makes you feel good. It provides engagement. It sparks your interest and can be a source of flow, which is that state of being fully absorbed in something, in the zone. It's a way to meet new people. You never know who you're going to meet. So it's a way of providing that sort of social well-being. And it's also can give you that sort of deeper sense of meaning and purpose as well, because travel expands your horizons. And it can also give you that sense of achievement when you actually do get to the place that you've always dreamed of going to. So yes, new travel experiences really do contribute to your well-being. They feed your well-being.
For the more experientially enhanced among us and the folk who might be sort of heading towards the latter decades and so on, is it never too late to effectively start saying, yes, I'm going to actually make that step? I'm thinking of people who might have never even left the country over the last 40, 50 years. Is there still a chance to actually take that step?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I believe that your horizons expand as you get older. And actually, as you begin to age, you've got more of a sense of what's important in life. And maybe you've, you know, acquired everything, all the possessions that you want to have. So I think you really come to appreciate what is important. And those experiences, those new travel experiences, can be a really sort of strong sense of meaning and give you a purpose as well. If you missed out on it first time round, say, you know, in your 20s, here's the opportunity as you move into later life to experience more of the world.
Any particular areas that you'd like to visit yourself, Miriam? Is it a case of, I've always wanted to go to the Arctic Ocean or the Antarctic?
Well, funnily enough, the number one item on the bucket list in this survey by Hilton Hotels and Resorts is to see the Northern Lights. Mm. And I did see the Northern Lights, but it's about 20 years ago now, when I was sort of doing all my backpacking around the world. And I'd love to see the Northern Lights again. So I'd love to head north.
And where can people actually go to find out more information about the Our Stage Your Story campaign? Obviously, Hilton's Our Stage Your Story campaign. What's the best location?
Well, the website is ourstageyourstory.com. And there's lots of inspiration and travel tips there to turn your dreams into a reality.
See, that's clearly why you were defined as the best positive psychologist in Britain. And understandably so. Miriam, it's been a delight sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably positive and interesting telephonic link with us on the programme? Has it been okay for you? It's our customer satisfaction scenario.
Oh, yes. Delightful.
Good.
Well, absolute pleasure talking to you.
Hopefully we'll be able to connect again in the not-too-distant future to keep the notion of applied positive psychology going and indeed discussing travel and more. Miriam, we hope you'll return.
Positive psychologist. Thank you, Miriam. It's okay. I know. First time was always difficult with those last two questions. Can you remember the first time we put those two questions to your good self, Richard Fitzwilliams? How to respond? You know,
yes, indeed, I can. And I mean, it's a strange and a weird bizarre creature who would say no.
Occasionally there have been a couple, but we don't think of them because they are dead to us now. But it's just part and parcel of the whole thing. Richard, before we go into Money Monster and more, Claire is, well, very sad actually, as indeed is Mary Dancy. Not only because it's their last official midweek drives for a wee while, certainly. I mean, although telephonic links will be there, I'm sure, but my fears that I thought were going to be unfounded have indeed now been confirmed, that we don't get an extra bank holiday for the Queen's official celebrations of her birthday.
I've been lied to.
I mean, I was automatically assumed that, you know, 1977, it was celebration. I think other sort of extra days have come through. The royal wedding, I think, we had with you know, Kate.
But these were, of course, there were the Jubilees was somewhat different. I mean, the Queen's decision, obviously, when she reached the age of 90 in April, this was something that was, as you know, low-key. Obviously, there were celebrations, official celebrations, but there is a feeling that bank holidays cost the country, and I think that has probably got something to do with it. But having said that,
we have fewer holidays than any other country in the Western world, it would seem.
You're absolutely right, and I think we should have more, and I agree with you. I wish we had.
And as Claire has actually just said, even if you work at a bank holiday, you get time and a half in certain instances, so
the merrier.
For sure, and bad form. I'm not blaming Her Majesty. I have to hesitate. You have to hasten to add, etc.
Politicians, exactly. The Queen acts on advice.
As
Sound FM, of course.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, we have European referendums coming up. You'd have that bank holiday. I know there's one on Monday, obviously, but that's always been there. Mary, bless her, thought it was an extra one on Monday. Still, there we go.
Between the two sides to remain to leave, there's not much love and friendship at the moment. And this is the movie where I have to lead off because I've just seen the preview. I am so enthusiastic. I wasn't, I have to say, aware of Jane Austen's epistolary novella written in 1794, which is always regarded as, well, her least famous work, to put it mildly. And this is an adaptation. Ingenuity itself, Whit Stillman directs and adapts, and it is 1.5 hours of pleasure unalloyed, a comedy of manners that I've been wanting to see for ages. It's a glorious movie. And, you know, when you see something that's enchanting, which is very funny, often wickedly funny, I mean, there's also certain tension as to who ends up with whom. It's well, well worth seeing, and indeed worth seeing again. Lady Susan Vernon, played by Kate Beckinsale, is widowed. She seeks refuge with her in-laws, and also she seeks not only her husband for herself, but also for her daughter, who ran away from school for reasons never explained. But Frederica, played by Morfydd Clark, is also in the market for a husband. Lady Susan is truly someone with a past that's talked about and gossiped about, but she's also got a friend, Alicia Johnson, played by Chloe Sevigny, who loves plotting and conniving, and the two of them together are absolutely priceless. It ought to be noted that Alicia's husband is played by Stephen Fry, a Mr. Johnson of whom, Susan says, he is too old to be governable, too young to die. It's full of hilarious one-liners. It's charming. It's really so gloriously photographed. And you can hear every word of the dialogue, which is something that's quite rare these days. The music I loved. And there are some marvelous performances, especially Lucy tries to interest her daughter in Sir James Martin. And there's a rather fine performance for someone, a representative of the aristocracy who seems positively bipolar and as a dimwit. It is an excellent movie, and what's more, it's such fun, and it's gloriously enjoyable and colourful.
Astounding. Absolutely wonderful and great. And we've been looking at the trailer and doing a whole variety of other bits and pieces as well. You just confused me, Richard, because we went off to Money Monster and as opposed to finding herself a rich husband. Claire, you were shouting delights with respect to this one.
Yes, I think it just shows how so many wonderful stories that were told so long ago are just resonating today. And it just kind of shows how powerful a storyteller Jane Austen was. And I love period pieces, so I definitely
like
want to see
Homer's
this.
Odyssey and the Star Trek series.
Indeed.
Greek myths to the present day. Does this also float your boat, Mary Dancy, having come fresh from the delights of X-Men Apocalypse last night?
I always love period dramas. It's like my go-to normally. If I have to watch anything at the cinema or on Netflix or anything, it would be a period drama. So Jane Austen all the way.
I'm sorry, Richard.
And I have to say, also, it is quite dramatic, because you can enjoy it and you love the wickedly funny lines and the banter and the planning and the plotting. There is, as I say, a certain tension in, how it ends, who succeeds, who doesn't succeed, and some of these priceless characters. It's a first-class cast. Everyone is marvellous. I can't believe that Kate Beckinsale is not going to be up for an award or nomination, because she
Richard, if she didn't receive one for the Underworld series, she's hardly going to get anything for Love and Friendship, is she? I mean, after the classic elements that she brought as one of the vampires and into that battle between...
Well, she is a vampire of a different sort in a different age. She needs a husband. It's essential. She's a widow. What are you going to do to help her?
And thereby hangs a tale that I'm sure that in so many ways Len, who I think it's Len Wiseman, who is Kate's husband and director, of course, in the Underworld series, strangely unreviewed by Richard. I think he sort of checked that whole sequence out there. But I'm sure he would.
Well, we get 12 films every week.
This is why you probably haven't been to see X-Men Apocalypse. But never mind. It's an important thing. Let us move on to...
Well, we move on to Money Monster, because firstly, it was rather a hit at Cannes, and secondly, directed by Jodie Foster. The message is obvious, but it's rather an audacious movie because of its plot. It's billed, I see, as a thriller. You could call it a black comedy, But again, well, part of its success is that there's tension which is sustained, even though some of the plot is rather improbable. Do you ever feel sympathetic with a terrorist? Well, I have to say that when you look at George Clooney's character, he plays Lee Gates. He's monstrously vulgar. He's scandalously uncaring. He's a Wall Street business show TV host who gives advice which is often shocking. We begin by despising him. And, I mean, he's egotistical. He despises humanity himself and gives advice that can be fatally wrong. And onto his show comes someone who is unwanted, an investor who's listened to his advice and lost absolutely everything. Fatefully, he's become a terrorist. He's armed. And on air, all of this is on air. It goes on air internationally. Lee is forced to wear a vest which is laden with explosives by Kyle, who's lost everything, played by Jack O'Connell, and who feels he's got nothing to lose, and he wants answers. Desperate for Lee's survival, Patty, played rather well by Julia Roberts, tries to advise him how to cope with the ups and downs of this. And meanwhile, at Ibis, which is where the fortune has been lost, the chief executive officer is not available, and the government wants answers. Who's going to give the answers? What are they? How are they eventually acquired? And what has actually been going on in the murky world of capitalism? I mean, we see the capitalists, the greed, the society, the vultures of Wall Street. All of this is nothing new. What is new, however, is the way this plot develops. And I was much intrigued, entertained, but also it's got the suspenseful quality. Clooney is marvelous as somebody who you begin to hate him, and subsequently it's quite interesting how the character develops. Jodie Foster does a good job of directing a movie which, well, it hammers home its messages. That isn't in dispute, nor is it subtle, nor are bits of it a surprise. But the plot is audacious and it's clever. And in an era where we genuinely fear terrorism, this is you could argue that capitalism is a form of duplicity of the very, very worst type. And we see how the mega rich play with their fortunes and how they gamble. It's a fascinating movie, and it's worthwhile seeing for Clooney, for Julia Roberts puts in a good turn, to be sure, but for a plot that will take you places that you, well, as I say, it's ingenious and audacious.
Personally, I don't think Julia Roberts has ever bettered her role as Tinkerbell in the movie Hook.
What about Erin Brockovich?
No, it's a brave attempt, you
Tinkerbell
know.
Tinkerbell is all the way.
For me, clearly, sort of was what she should have received the Academy Award for. Some people might say Pretty Woman. I say it's just a remake of Pygmalion.
Pretty Woman was very enjoyable, I thought.
There we are.
Yeah.
Okay, so Claire, let's move to the Money Monster sequence. Does it appeal?
Yeah, I find this sort of thing quite interesting because you've got the whole spectacle thing where if you're watching something that is unfolding in front of you that is really dramatic and really suspenseful, we're sort of watching people watch it happen as well, and it adds another dimension to it. So I think it's definitely something I would want to
see. Oh yes, absolutely. The world can tune in. It's on television. It's live, and it also goes places. No spoilers from me.
It goes places. There we are. Now I was just thinking, what would he do if the badger decided to actually strap explosives to himself?
Oh, gosh.
Held us for sort of prisoner. I know, Mary.
It could happen.
It's a station
autonomous
mascot.
Anyway,
you move out of the station if you wished and broadcast to continue on air.
Well,
they could be recorded. Of course
right.
They could.
Yeah, exactly.
Look what happens here.
Mary. What about yourself and Money Monster?
I really liked it. It reminds me a little bit like Phone Booth, and I remember watching that.
Phone Booth was extremely clever, but I have to say I saw it twice. I must mention briefly that Colin Farrell, I thought, was excellent, and the whole plot was superb because he's trapped in this phone booth by an unknown sniper whose identity he's unaware of. And the facts are that police chief, played by Forrest Whitaker, realizes there's something strange going on. Hence the fact that you've got this uneasy standoff featuring characters, including women linked to him. It is a fascinating movie, and the reason I saw it twice was that I was subjected to Alexander, which was too monstrous to...
Oh, come now. I know you secretly liked the sword and sandal joy that was brought
that
to
that. That is a truly cheap crack. I like the good ones. I don't like the bad ones. That implies that, in fact, I have no discrimination and taste.
No,
and
no.
Nobody,
Richard,
nobody who made Alexander had the remotest taste or idea what they were doing. And indeed, it has to be said, it's such disaster.
Richard,
Oliver Stone. No. Oliver Stone has made three director's cuts of it.
Yes.
The director's cut, the final cut, and the ultimate cut. And the ultimate cut include me out of all of them.
I tell you, all
well,
Oliver
it's
Stone...
It's not really awful. No. But I then saw Phone Booth a second time to enjoy seeing Colin Farrell suffer as he'd made me suffer when he played Alexander.
He was very good as Deadshot in the movie Daredevil. All Alexander actually needed, really, for total perfection was surely a major role for Chris Hemsworth, and that would have been ideal as far as Richard's
indeed,
concerned.
Indeed, mind you, I mean, they were all so bad, it didn't matter who played who.
Oh.
Costumes like that, the Battle of Gargamella was tolerable, yes, but putting that at the beginning simply means you've got to wade through 3 hours. And I must say that, Alexander, it's very seldom that you hear critics roar with laughter at scenes, roar with laughter en masse, by the way, at scenes not meant to be funny. When Alexander captures Babylon, his lover Hephaestion is rather ill. And when Colin Farrell gives an oration about the new world he hopes to build, which seems to go on forever, there's a cut to Hephaestion, who, of course, has died of boredom, and the critics roared.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, never take the word of the critics.
Well, I mean, the critics can be controversial, because if you look at the Cannes awards, I mean...
Ken Loach got one, so let's celebrate that.
Some of that. Ken Loach got one, and let's celebrate, and certainly his second, of course, win the Bali. I thought was excellent, but and interesting, too, that Shahab Hussain in Asghar Farhadi is a salesman. I mean, Farhadi is a separation, I think, so the finest films I've seen in the last decade. But it is interesting that some movies, it's only The End of the World was one from Canada, had been slated by the critics. Indeed, the jury prize, which went to American Honey by Andrea Arnold, of course, who's British, was also not a popular movie with a large number of critics. So it is intriguing. I was rather glad that Olivier Assayas shared Best Director. This was a personal shopper, a movie that's had mixed reviews, because although I haven't seen that, I love The Clouds of Sils Maria with Kristen Stewart and Juliette Binoche.
And she was so good in Twilight, let's not sort of move. Let's move on to a 1980s Dublin, seen through the eyes of a 14-year-old boy named Connor, who's looking for a break from a home strained by his parents' relationship and money troubles.
Ah, but we move on next week to that.
Oh!
Yes, because Love and Friendship was what was...
He squirted in a little touch of Beckinsale as opposed to Sing Street, which is a...
But what I will do and what I will recommend, if you want an extraordinary movie, since there is space for three, which is rare, but...
Very rare, Richard, actually.
No, it is rare, but this is a movie such as you would never see, and indeed I had never seen. There are very few movies that I've seen in one take. Hitchcock's Rope was one, Russian Ark another, there, and also Birdman, most famously, the Alexandra Gonzalez Iñárritu movie, which won at the Oscars. But Victoria is a film to see. What can happen when, if you're basically your job's working in a cafe, you're partying, and you run into a collection of guys who seem amiable enough, even if they might be a bit dodgy, and you spend a while with them, you get friendly with them, and perhaps they're on a mission which later in the night has to be accomplished, or following morning to be more precise, and you gradually, very, very gradually, get sucked in to a situation that can only resemble a human hell. It is quite extraordinary the way it's filmed with handheld cameras. I caught it some weeks after it opened. It is still at the Curzon Soho if you're in London, and Art House Movies. It will, no doubt, if not already released on DVD. It's one of those extraordinary experiences where for 2.5 hours, which a long time, no doubt, and it will absolutely grip you in a vice-like hold as you follow what is initially something quite casual and natural, and it evolves into something very, very different.
Well, again, probably just frustration because there was not a bank holiday to celebrate a 90th birthday of the reigning monarch.
No, Victoria is not the sort of movie that
that's fine.
You need to go and see it and experience it.
Clearly, yes. Well, there we are.
It was filmed in that way. I mean, Birdman, the way that was filmed, that was noticeable and won a great deal of praise. It's very interesting that Victoria's still running after weeks. And
long may it continue in so many
ways. And long may also the fact that experimental films, long may they continue, because this is a sort of treat that, frankly, I didn't know what I was going to see.
I
hid from all trailers, hid from all reviews, but spotted it was still on, and went and I was absolutely fascinated by it.
So that's Victoria.
Okay.
Thumbs up there. Oh, Claire, go for it.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Richard?
Indeed I have.
Good, good. And will you be joining us again next week?
I most certainly will be.
I could be a millionaire if I had the money. I could own a mansion. No, I don't think I'd like that. But I might write a song that makes you laugh. Now that would be funny. And you could tell your friends in England you'd like that. But now I've chosen aeroplanes and boats to come between us. And a line or two on paper wouldn't go amiss. How is Worcestershire? Is it still the same between us? Do you still use television to send you fast asleep? Can you last another week? Does the cistern still leak? Or have you found a man to mend it? Oh, and by the way, how's your broken heart? Is that mended too? I miss you. I miss you. I really do. I've been reading Browning, Keats and William Wordsworth, and they all seem to be saying the same thing for me. Well, I like the words they use, and I like the way they use them, you know. Home thoughts from abroad is such a beautiful poem. And I know how Robert Browning must have felt, 'cause I'm feeling the same way about you.
But we've headed through so many things since then, and who better to actually address the kind of key issues that address with respect to the Royal Mail and ways in which you can actually help out with the Royal Mail with your own personalised letters, etc., than the tremendously talented, extraordinarily wonderful historian extraordinaire Lucy Worsley. Lucy, good morning. How are you?
Alex, you're a man of good taste. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Moving on, this particular item, I can't but 500 years, and now we're actually in the second decade of the 21st century. We're beginning to think actually it's all being replaced by text messaging and emails and such like. But that written word, it's a very powerful and significant aspect of our lives.
It still is, absolutely. And to celebrate their 500th birthday, the Royal Mail are doing a really lovely project which aims to get everybody all over the country to look in the attic and see what they've got up there in the way of old family letters, stuff that's been overlooked. And this project aims to collect these letters. People can send them and they can submit them to the Royal Mail project that's called Letters of Our Lives. And the aim is to create a new history of the country, really. A sort of worm's eye view of history, I'd like to describe it as. We're not interested in kings and queens and great events. We're interested in normal people's written recollections of things that have happened to them personally.
Clearly the high point of the penny post led to an upsurge in popularity of letter writing and so on, but it's possibly also important from a historical point of view to bear in mind that clearly this might be skewed slightly to the literate members of the population, because it was quite some time before, of course, people were able to read and write.
Yes, of course, of course. And as the centuries unfold, you get letter writing sort of reaching a wider social group. Until at the height of the Second World War, the Royal Mail were handling 12 million items a week. It was absolutely universal by then. But it's, you know, everybody's family has its own important story to tell. So whether you come across a letter from your grandparents describing the first trip they made abroad, or the birth of a grandchild, or whatever. We're looking for just little human moments, human stories. Mm.
And internationally, this is something which, again, clearly you mentioned the two world wars of the last century. There is that sort of sense that when people are actually writing something, it's really part of them. It's a very personalised aspect. Many is the author that we've spoken to who says that they still actually have a fondness for writing long form as well. It kind of it connects a little bit more with the page and themselves.
Well, yeah, as a historian, reading a personal letter is just such a thrill, because you do get a real insight into what a person is really thinking. It's about as good as it gets beyond actually interviewing them. And the greatest treat of all is to unwrap a really crusty old letter and to read the best words ever that you can find in a letter, which are, "Burn this." If a letter says, "Burn this," then you know you're not supposed to be reading it.
Forbidden fruit. I was fascinated in terms of the letters you've already received, that there's a letter dated from 1978, which some people might say, well, that's very, very new. But it's from Henry Winkler, of course, the Fonz, who thanks a fan for a scrapbook that knocked his socks off.
That's so nice. The Fonz wrote to this little girl who'd sent him in a fan scrapbook that she'd made. Must have made her day. That's a really lovely thing.
And again, that sort of relationship, presumably, of fans writing to Hollywood superstars, that's again something else where, I mean, obviously in many cases it's just a pro forma letter that comes back, but if it's an original piece, it's something else that's special and unique.
It's something that's worth treasuring. Another one that I'd like to mention that's come in already from Derby, actually, not a million miles away from Lincoln, is one from the First World War. And this was a gentleman called Charles Featherstone, who'd been injured. His parents were obviously desperately worried about him. They hadn't heard from him. Finally, they had a postcard from him, and it says, it's quite funny, actually. It says, "I'm quite well. Hope you are same. Yours, Charles." How's that for the stiff upper lip?
Well, perfection. In fact, we can actually learn from that as we head through the whole process. Now, if people are listening to this and they're saying, yes, but we don't want to send our priceless letters through the post. Mm. They don't
No, not at all. The way you can take part, the easiest thing to do is to search on the internet for Letters of Our Lives, the Royal Mail Letters of Our Lives. That's the name of the project. And it has its own special website where you can scan your letter and you can upload it, or you can send a photocopy using the free post address. Obviously, it's the Royal Mail. They're very easy to get information to. But please don't send originals. Please send photocopies if you're going to use the free post address.
As we look ahead to the 21st century and it proceeds, do you think people will still have the same fondness for emails? Or is that digital technology and the digital world that we live in somehow, obviously it's less tangible, but is it something else which people are going to say, I don't know, it's not quite the same?
Well, of course, it's different, and there's a new breed of historians who are coming forwards now who are called digital historians, and they're working out the best way to capture the important stuff from this mass of information that we have swirling around. But as we send more and more emails, I think that the idea that on a really special occasion you might sit down and actually write a letter, it gets even more powerful somehow, because the less often we do it, the more poignant, nostalgic, powerful, important it feels. To send somebody a letter is a really important thing still to do sometimes.
I'm sure that there'll be people in decades hence treasuring the Lucy Worsley letter they might have actually received from your good self, Lucy. It's joyous stuff. I'd love to actually go on to talk about your feeding of the llamas back in the day, but that's a different line entirely, because somehow I always feel it's important to bring a llama in some way, shape or form, and you did it in full force with your first sort of role, of course. These days, of course, you're much better known as Ace TV presenter and indeed chief curator at Historic Royal Palaces. A reminder, right, of course, the easiest way for this little project, of course, is to go to royalmailgroup.com/letters of interest, and that presumably is the key way forward. You've already shared your most important sort of find so far. Any particular eras of the last three or 400 years that you'd sort of say, oh, I'd love to get a letter from that particular zone?
Well, most of the ones that have come in are from the 20th century, a few from the 19th, and I think just one from the 18th so far. But, you know, all periods are welcome. Every year is important.
Because presumably there's also the preservation issue, of course, that paper does tend to decay, and over the times, unless it really is kept securely and safely, etc., it may well have sort of just ended up in, I suppose, the great evaporating pile of paper detritus somewhere.
Well, there's a whole profession of the paper conservator. Those are the people who've spent a lifetime studying the best way to preserve paper. And what a lot of people assume, which is incorrect, is that you should use white gloves. You shouldn't use white gloves. That's now the official advice. Clean hands, clean bare hands is the best thing, because gloves make you clumsy, and that makes it more likely that you'll tear the pages.
Lucy, once again, a top tip, as we expected. It's been tremendous touching base with yourself. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Oh, yes.
Good. And can we hopefully prevail upon you, good self, to hopefully join us again in the not-too-distant future, because, I mean, the fascinating world of history, it's just never-ending. We are living, breathing history. Will you be kind enough to return?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thanks very much for having me.
There we are, historian Lucy Worsley with a wonderful project by the Royal Mail. So, Claire, have you got any letters that you'd like to send in as examples of communiques in the Margerison household over the last few
years? I when I was younger, I used to write to a lot of authors, actually. Mm-hmm. I had about, like, a big envelope of
Did
letters.
Did they respond?
Yeah, I had quite a lot of responses, actually.
Have you kept them?
Yep, I've kept them all.
Well, then you should scan them and send them in.
And for the last 3 years, me and my best friend Nikki have been writing to each other. So I've got a
correspondence
massive
galore.
Thick of
you
them.
You are the person for whom this survey
writing.
Was actually put together.
Genuinely.
Yes. You know, somebody was very excited, as we heard, because they received a thank you letter from Henry Winkler to say that. So great stuff there. Ian Lennox, when's the last time you actually wrote a letter?
Oh, as opposed to an email, you mean?
Yeah, we don't. What would you do?
Years ago, I think.
Years ago, yeah.
Maybe when I was on hold. No, I didn't. I sent a postcard occasionally.
Really?
Yeah. That's it, really.
Mary Dancy.
Yeah, I agree with, like, postcards. I can't remember the last time I wrote a hand letter. So I think it was with family, like maybe to my granddad or something.
Talking about that, I thought I'd just do the last bit of that conversation. And, years and years ago, I did an interview with Captain Cookson, who told me that as a young girl, she went off to a very famous lady author and received asking for advice about writing things, and she received the most dismissive reply, which is something she never forgot. So when she became famous, she had people writing to her all over the world, and she diligently replied to every one of them. She had a huge carousel of names with little index cards, which gave her very brief notes of aid a memoir of what the conversations or writings have been about, and she replied them all. She had this, so anyway, I thought I'd put in that.
Curiously, Kevin Keegan said the same thing when he actually signed my autograph book as well, actually. You know, because when he was a youngster waiting outside, he was dismissed summarily by a footballer he'd cherished and worshipped from afar, and he said that was never going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. He was actually extraordinarily generous with his time to the public.
Well, exactly.
Lots of things never heard about, you know.
Yeah, this is why he was playing for Liverpool, you see. So, not that I was a Liverpool fan, but, you know, time for the jingle.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the Midweek Drive.
Yes, her own solo jingle, because in a couple of weeks' time, in fact, next week, she'll be a solo girl again at the halls of Midweek Drive show.
Never
mind. Welcome, Eva MacDonald.
Thank you.
Excellent. Just in time for the celebrations that doubtless will be heard throughout Tyneside as Ian Lennox continues the celebratory news that in Rafa he trusts. Guaranteed Division One football within the...
I've had another good bit of news as well, actually.
Yeah, yes?
Yeah, you know my cats?
Yes.
Well, they keep on going into bins, knocking bins over and taking little bits of paper, which they treat like mice and run around the house with them.
Hooligans.
Well, anyway, about a week ago, waste about bins in the house. About a week ago, I put out a £5 note on my mantelpiece.
Are you bribing your cats?
No, yeah.
Just money monsters. Anyway,
one of them obviously took it. And I thought I just gave up trying to find it. It's a big house. So about 3 or 4 days ago, I was sitting on my chair and who could have jumped on my knee but over with this £5 note in his mouth.
Oh.
So these things go in threes. So Rafa Benitez, me £5 note, something else is going to happen, Alex. It's probably talked to you.
Yeah.
It's just clearly wonderful. Unless, of course, that Ian is actually charging his cats and they actually go out to work.
That's their rent.
Bring home the sort of challenges. Splendid stuff. It's time, Ian, for the Cameron Turbury musical selection, which I don't know. It is traditional.
It's very country.
I'm almost tempted to say it's country and western, really, in terms of the way forward. Eva, of course, presumably this is the first time you've heard it because
it is. Yeah.
Do you already ever return to the Wednesday evening slot?
I don't know.
Doesn't know.
I have work. Maybe. It's the mystic ball.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the world of McDonald is a strange and mystical world in its own routine, etc. however, are you ready to listen to John Wolfe with an E and this singing thing?
I am, with an E.
I learned G, C, and D on a hand-me-down guitar. At 13, all my heroes